The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
The only two things in life that make...
Well, the official introduction I should have for Harry is that he's the author of The Demographic Cliff and editor of the free newsletter Economy and Markets. In fact, you can go to harrydent.com, and you can get a free copy of The Demographic Cliff. All you'll have to do is pay $4.95 for shipping and handling. But I know him as my personal friend and mentor and somebody that I highly respect, Mr. Harry Dent. Good morning, Harry.
Oh, hi, Mike.
How are you doing?
Good.
All right. So these must be interesting times for you because it's beginning to – it looks like it's beginning to line up with your prognostications that you've been – talking about for quite some time. How do you see what's going on? How do you read what's going on?
Well, I tell you, Mike, the number one thing I look at is the Chinese stock market because the bubble started to burst there. It's the first big bubble in stocks that is bursting recently, and it is bursting. And the Chinese government's buying their own market like the U.S. did in 1929 when our last great bubble started to burst. And that lasted a few months before the market went into the greatest downturn in history. You can't keep a bubble going forever. And you were mentioning Jeremy Siegel earlier. I love Jeremy Siegel. He's a nice guy. He lives on a campus somewhere.
Yeah, he does.
He studies long-term statistics and says stocks go up 7% adjusted for inflation over the last 100 years. I don't care about that. Stocks went up down 89%. From 1929 to 32 and took 24 years to get back to even. And he doesn't see that little minor adjustment in things. He's an academic. I love him. He's got great long-term statistics. He is going to be dead wrong about this stock market. We've had the greatest bubble in history since 1929, and it's going to burst. It's that simple. Bubbles always burst. There's no exceptions in history. If anybody can show me a stock market that's gone up like this one's gone up in the last 6-7 years, or the one from 1995 to 2000, or any bubble in history and didn't burst, and I'll say, oh, I probably will be wrong. I'm not going to be wrong about this. It's going to burst. That's simple.
Do you have any idea when? I mean, that's the hard part, I realize.
And that's the hard part.
I'm not trying to get you in the corner here. I just, you know, it just seems to be more imminent. You know, every year it just seems to – we'll get a little worried about something, and then the market will get a little better. Somebody will stimulate someplace. Nothing seems to be working anymore, though.
Yeah, no, that is true, Mike. I mean, I've studied history back so far, I don't even want to talk about it. And you can see these bubbles build, and you can see them burst. But we have never seen global central banks and governments basically coordinate to stop the bubble from bursting. They're just saying, well, right, if the economy goes down a couple trillion, we'll print a couple trillion dollars of money to offset it. This has never happened except in World War II, you know. So this has been the thing. They've kept this bubble going. But I tell you, the one thing I've been looking for a long time, and I wasn't sure it was going to happen, you look for divergences. The smart money looks at the top of a bubble or a bull market, a long-term bull market, for when everybody's just buying the largest cap stocks and nobody's buying small cap stocks anymore. You know, it's the dumb money buying and the smart money exiting is what it is. And that has happened in spades in the last six to eight months. I mean, the Russell 2000, the small cap index is like, you know, 15%. Off its highs, and the S&P and the NASDAQ are just 3-6% off their highs. This is the sign that this is happening very soon. And, of course, this has been the worst January. No Santa Claus rally, which you're on my newsletter. You know,
right,
I've said this
right.
The last couple months. I don't see a Santa Claus rally this year, and that's the same thing in 2008, same thing in 2001. When you see stocks perform badly in December and January, the very best months, it is not always, but often a sign that you're going to see a big downturn. So I'm seeing every sign after years of this bubble going a little higher, a little higher. And people got to remember, the stock market's gone nowhere since November of 2014. Nowhere. And it's lower than it was then. And so I've been telling people, look, I cannot tell you when a bubble's going to peak because it's like dropping, you know, sand on a mound until it gets to extremes and you have an avalanche. There will always be an avalanche, but you know, you don't know which pebble of sand's going to burst the bubble. That's the problem. But we're seeing signs. Yes, this thing is bursting, and China has been my biggest sign. The China stock bubble finally burst. And when the China real estate bubble burst to follow, and it's been starting, the whole world's going to go down. And I'm telling you that this is the biggest thing I'm looking at, China, because China's the greatest bubble at the center of this global bubble. And there's never been a bubble bigger than this. And that China bubble's going to burst, and it's going to make Japan's bubble burst, which I was the only guy in the whole world that forecast in 1989. When this China bubble burst, the whole world's going to come down.
Now, Harry, can you help me with this? Because I heard a comment this morning that said, you know, China's not that important to us. Apparently, they're only like 4% of our trade or GDP or something. The guy really didn't illustrate.
Yeah, our
exactly
trade.
What it was.
Well, tell
so, but we're more
to the
important
emerging
than
countries around the world.
Yeah.
You know,
so why is it? Why is China
are down
so important?
70%. Do you know how many people predicted that oil would be down to $30 to $20 years ago? We did. We said the commodity bubble's bursting. Emerging countries are going to go down, even though they have the strongest demographics, which I study, because China's going down. China bought all the commodities in the world. So tell me China's slowdown doesn't affect the world if you're an emerging right country, which is now 53% of global GDP.
So that's why China is such a big deal, right? Because of the impact on the rest of the world, not so much on the
rest
impact
of the world. We don't care. Right. If China catches a cold, we don't even sneeze. We don't care about China. China affects the rest of the world. And
so
Chinese are the people buying $20 million condos in New York and L.A. and San Francisco and Vancouver and London and Sydney and Melbourne and Singapore.
Yes, they
like
are.
Like the Japanese were doing in the late 80s.
Will
so
that
Chinese
continue?
Matter a lot.
Will that continue as they try for a little while they try to get money out of China?
Yeah, especially in Australia. I think Australia would be the last place to go. But when here's the thing people don't realize. It's the affluent in China. The 10% of Chinese richest people control 60% of the income there, have 90%, 95% or whatever of all the assets and real estate in China. When their wealth implodes from the Chinese bubble imploding, they will stop spending money, transferring money, buying real estate in the rest of the world, just like the Japanese did in the early 90s.
Right.
And the whole real estate bubble. There's no way Manhattan would still be going up, or Sydney, or all these cities, if it weren't for the marginal Chinese buyers. Nobody in these cities can afford to buy the real estate anymore, including Houston or Dallas. They can't afford to buy it. Only the foreigners.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And boy, I tell you what, when the Japanese stopped, I was in the business. Boy, when the Japanese stopped, boy, it came to a screeching halt. I tell you what, we have less than a minute, so I'll just wait to ask my questions on their side. But what I'd like to know from you is, what do you think about the Federal Reserve? Are they going to increase interest rates anymore for the rest of the next year?
They're done. They're done. The economy's going to go down faster than they think, and that's the last rate rise I think we'll likely see. They're going to be talking about QE4 before we know it.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, hold on to that, Harry, and we'll tell the folks where to invest on the other side break. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today my friend and mentor, Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is the author of a new book called The Demographic Cliff. And you can go on to harrydent.com, and Harry will give you a free copy of it. All you have to do is pay $4.95 for shipping and handling, I would do that as quickly as possible. I think you need to read that. Go to harrydent.com, and then Harry also has a free newsletter called Economy Markets. Harry, how do they get the free newsletters at the same website?
Yeah, harrydent.com. I mean, you just, the book offer's there, and then you go up to the right-hand corner, and you can just put in your email and get the free newsletter. And it's a damn good newsletter.
I'll use a different word, but it is a darn good newsletter. And and both Harry and Rodney Johnson, who is another favorite guest of ours, write in that letter frequently, most of the time, I guess. You should get a copy of that. It's a great, great letter. All right, Harry, you slipped it in just before the break that you think the Fed is kind of one and done. Richard Fisher came out the other day, I guess it was 2 days ago, with a fairly scandalous or significant interview, which he said that he thinks the Fed's like totally out of bullets, that they painted themselves into a corner. Do you think that's true?
Yes, they have. They've stimulated the economy on free money. Now, it's not just the zero short-term interest rates. It's the quantitative easing that has pushed long-term treasury bonds, 10-year treasury bonds, down to zero adjusted for inflation. Money is free. How much more can you go than free money? And when you have free money throughout history, and I've got many examples in my book, when you have free money, you always get rampant speculation and bubbles that burst. Free money creates bubbles. So they've kept this bubble that they already created in the 80s and 90s going with free money. And, yes, they're out of bullets. What are they going to do now? Put interest rates to negative, which some countries in Europe have done? That is so extreme and stupid. It's crazy. This is desperation, and it's not going to last, and it never has in history.
Now, is there any place in the world that you do like? We've had several guests on that have said, well, it's not going to be so great over here, obviously not going to be great in Asia, but Europe looks like it could be promising because of the stimulus, because of QE, because of Draghi's position over there, which is similar to our Fed's position for several years, and obviously the Fed here It manipulated the market higher, created what I call an artificial market. But it looks like Draghi has that opportunity in Europe. Would that give you rise to maybe invest in Europe?
Do you hear me laughing?
Yes, I hear you laughing, but I had to get my question out, so I hear you laughing, yeah.
And you know better than anybody. In 1989, I was the only person in the entire universe, not just the world, but in the entire universe, that predicted that Japan was going to have a giant fall while the U.S. and Europe rallied. And it was just on demographics. You know which country has the worst demographics in the entire world in the next 8 years? Germany. Germany is the center of Europe, supposed to hold the Eurozone together with, bailing out Greece and all these other countries. They have worse demographics ahead than Japan had in the 90s when Japan fell. And you got to remember, Japan had a 60% real estate and stock crash in the 90s when the rest of the world had the greatest boom in history, which, again, I alone predicted from demographics. So Europe has got nothing but downward trends. Germany, Austria, Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain, especially the southern and central parts of Europe, have the worst demographic trends, only second to Japan, and worse in the years ahead. So there's no way Europe's going to do well, and the reason they're having to stimulate so strongly, like Japan, the strongest stimulus in quantitative easing after we stopped is still in Japan and Europe, is because their demographic trends are so weak and their debt trends are so terrible. So anybody thinks that Europe's going to bail out the world, oh, my God. And I'm hoping Jeremy Siegel's not saying that, although
He's not saying that. We've had several guests on that. That is so stupid.
Europe is a dying country, a dying region. It is the Rome of the developed world.
Yeah, no, frankly, Jeremy's still bullish on the U.S., so he hasn't left and gone across the pond yet. So, all right, so a lot of people out there are listening. They're retirees. They're people that are either already in retirement or they're baby boomers getting ready for retirement. Where do people put their money? Where do they invest?
you know what? This is the hardest thing to say to anybody at any time, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime period, like the 1930s, where major bubbles and everything burst. Debt bubbles burst, financial asset bubbles burst, and everything goes down except for what? The safest assets, the highest quality, like treasury bonds, long-term treasury bonds, corporate AAA bonds. Both of those roughly doubled in value in the 1930s, while real estate crashed and didn't come back for a long time. Stocks crashed much more. Commodities crashed. Everything went down. And that's the problem, is most financial advisors will tell you, and this is correct most of the time, that, just diversify and hold on. You'll be okay. No. That in 1929, when stocks peaked, in September 1929, they did not get back to those levels until 1953, 24 years later. In other words, if you were a retiree in 1929 and had your money largely in stocks, you would have been dead before stocks got back to break even, and you would have lost 89% at the worst. That's the type of thing, not quite as extreme. That's the type of scenario we're looking at. It only happens once in a lifetime. I call it the winter season in the economy. And it always comes after a debt and financial bubble burst. And that's what's happening. And the bubble, again, the biggest sign to me is that the Chinese bubble's bursting, and like the subprime bubble thing in real estate in the U.S. in 2006, Ford, this is the trigger for the next global downturn. But it's not. It's a trigger because the whole world has more debt than we've ever had in history, and this debt has to be washed out. And it always happens in history.
Yeah, it does. It has to be dealt with. I need to ask you about oil because you're an expert in commodities and demographics, and I'm sure you have an opinion on oil, and that's really important to my listening audience being in Texas and Colorado. What are your thoughts on oil?
Well, our thoughts are clear. I've been saying this for years. The commodity bubble, 30-year cycle, bursting starting in 2008, 2009, and oil, I've been predicting, would go to at least 20 bucks. I've been predicting this for several years, not just recently, and it's already back at 32, and it's going to be at 20 bucks and maybe at 10 before it's over. So this oil bubble is going to go burst more, and you're right, for Texas, this is the worst thing that could happen. Because the whole fracking industry, which is dominated in Texas and North Dakota, came out of bubble economics. It came out of cheap, long-term, high-yield debt to finance this, and high oil prices stimulated by quantitative easing after the crash of 2008. I mean, oil went to 147, down to 32, which we also predicted would happen, and it went back up to 115, and now it's at 32, 33. I mean,
yeah.
How could this be good for frackers who are not? Everybody was told that this is the new low-cost industry for oil. No, it's a high-cost industry. It only works in bubble economics. The whole fracking revolution would have never happened without quantitative easing.
Okay.
Never.
Well, Harry, it's been great to have you on. We really appreciate it. I guess you mentioned something. Harry, can you hang on for just 1 minute? There's one more question.
Sure.
I want to ask you. All right, we'll be back with Harry Dent in just a minute. I just can't let him go. Hang on, stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, I look forward to today's show because I have my friend and demographic economist, Harry Dent, on with us. By the way, the book is The Demographic Cliff. Go to harrydent.com. You can get a free copy of it. Harry's giving you a free copy of the book. All you have to do is pay $4.95 for shipping and handling. I asked him during the break why he was giving it away for free, and he says, well, that's because that's what the publishers want to do. So you're very fortunate. So I would go online, go to harrydent.com. Also, sign up for his free newsletter. I get that newsletter. I read it every time it's sent to me. It's a great, great letter, Economy and Markets, with Harry and Rodney Dent. So, Harry, just a few more questions, and thank you for staying on for a third segment. Let's talk about gold, because I know a lot of people would think, okay, if the markets are going to go down, I'm going to run over and buy some gold.
Yeah, that's been a pretty bad decision so far.
It has.
But what we show, and I've shown this over time in my books and my newsletters, gold is not a crisis hedge. The biggest crisis we just had was in late 2008 when the whole financial system melted down. And what did gold do? Went running for mommy, down 33%, silver down 50%. It was the U.S. dollar that everybody said was going to crash that went up 27% in that time. That's the safe haven, the U.S. dollar, not gold. Gold is an inflation hedge, and it was a wonderful inflation hedge in the 1970s when inflation was the trend. And we know how to predict inflation. Young people, a lot of young people entering the workforce is what causes inflation. It's not monetary policy, as economists say. Economists don't know anything about the economy, from my point of view. I study people. People drive the economy. Their predictable spending habits, their inflationary impacts, their deflationary impacts as they age. This is what drives the economy. And economists don't run businesses, don't, invest money. They
right.
don't understand the economy. So that's what we look at, and that's why we have to look at it. So the trends are down because baby boomers are done, and inflation is going to happen because we've had a great debt bubble that has to deleverage. And every time debt bubbles deleverage in the 1930s or the 1870s or the 1830s and 40s, you go back in history, every debt bubble is followed by deleveraging. And deleveraging causes deflation in prices, and gold doesn't do well in that. So gold is not the safe haven, and it's going to keep going down. I think it's going to bounce. I've been saying recently it's going to bounce in the next few months. In the early stages of this crisis, like it bounced in 2008, and then when the crisis actually hits later this year, it's going to go crashing down again.
Now, could there be a way, and I know this is kind of out of left field, but, nobody had ever seen quantitative easing before or anything quite like that.
Right.
Could there be a way that they could create some way to release the stress of this bubble without a collapse? Does it have to collapse?
I just have one rule in life, and I know that things can always change and be different, but I've studied every single bubble in everything from to every type of stocks and gold and commodities and real estate all throughout history. Once a bubble goes exponential, it's not sustainable. And when it collapses, it doesn't correct slowly and deflate slowly. It crashes. And people keep telling me this is not a bubble, and I'm like, well, let me put the S&P 500 up versus 95 to 2000. Oops, this is even more of a bubble. Oh, no, you're saying it's not a bubble. And I tell every economist, if you can show me a bubble that went exponentially in real estate or stocks or gold or anything else and didn't collapse and corrected slowly over a long period of time, I said, I will quit my profession and become a limo driver in Australia. I'm serious. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Now, maybe this time it will, but what do we see in China? And this is why I'm focused on China. China's got the greatest stock and the greatest real estate bubble in all of modern history. And they are trying to buy their own market to keep their bubble from bursting. And what keeps happening? It keeps collapsing.
Right. Right.
And just like 1929, the first crash, 1% in 2.5 months. And that's another reason, Mike, I tell people, get out of a bubble a little early instead of late, because they crash 2 times or 3 times as fast as they build exponentially. China is feverishly buying their own stock market with hundreds of billions of dollars, and it's still crashing.
Right.
So what does that tell you? You can't stop a bubble from crashing.
All right. One last question. You mentioned in a recent newsletter that you think this is all going to start in February, and then you and I talked on the break, and you thought maybe earlier. What does it look like going forward over the next week or two?
Yeah, well, you know, normally, you know, the best months of the stock market are December and January. And when, and this does not always happen, but when the stock market does poorly in December and January, which it has done here and is doing in spades now, it is a, it is an increasing sign that you could have a very bad year like 2001 or 2008 in the stock market. It doesn't always happen, but since we're already calling with demographic trends and bubble trends and debt trends, and especially Germany having such poor demographics ahead, we're saying, look, the markets are due for a big crash anyway. The fact that we had no gains in December and falling in the early part of January here, this just increases the odds three times to me that we're going to see a big, not just a 10 or 20% correction, but a 50, 60, 70% correction in the next year or two. And we have this, what I call the megaphone pattern in stocks. And nobody's talking about this on Wall Street. And it's totally obvious. And the same thing that happened in the late 60s and early 70s before the last great crash. Every bubble has taken us to new highs, and every correction in between has taken us to new lows. Just a correction to new lows down to about 6,000 or so would be a 70% correction in stocks from the 18,350 high in the Dow, and nobody's thinking that's possible. And I go on CNBC and Fox Business all the time, and people say, well, how bad could it get? And people say, well, we might have a 10% correction. And I say, no, the next correction is likely to be 60 to 70%. And this is totally obvious if you just look at the chart pattern.
I bet you lift a few eyebrows with that prediction, that's for sure. Listen, Harry, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. Give my love to Jeannie.
Okay, yeah, same to you. And you're my favorite financial advisor.
Thank you. Thank you, Harry.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.